Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Junkyard Dogcast, the post-G-Day episode of the Junkyard Dogcast. I'm your host, Jordan Hill. We have the whole crew with us on this Saturday afternoon, Benjamin Wolk and Kip Adams, to recap a pretty busy and pretty exciting G-Day. The red team and the black team tie 20-20. Pretty exciting game down to the wire with Carson Beck throwing a touchdown to Dominic Lovett in the final seconds of the game. A lot to break down, a lot to discuss from this scrimmage, and by the time we get to the end of this episode, we're also going to talk about a new commit for the Bulldogs. But we're going to jump in and start with this spring action. A lot to break down, and I'm going to just start with Ben. Ben, what stood out to you the most from what we saw on the field at G-Day? Some good, some bad, some new faces, some young guys who stood out. What caught your attention from what you got to see down on the field?
Well, I think for starters, you got to look at the last possession of the game, and I think that all eyes were on that sort of two-minute drive that Georgia went on, and you know, down seven, first-team offense, being able to march down the field, score a touchdown late in the game. I know that a lot of people probably would have liked them to go for two just for there to be a winner and a loser on G-Day, because I saw the Jumbotron shot up the dog's win symbol the second that the game ended, and it might have been the only game ever that it didn't apply in here, but I thought that Carson didn't have his best stuff. He admitted as much when he was talking to media post game. But for him to sort of show that clutch gene there at the end of the game, and I thought that Dominic Lovett had a really good day across the board. And so for him to be the one to kind of cash it in there at the end, I thought was a nice little cherry on top to the spring game.
Yeah, Carson Beck, 25 of 46, throwing the ball, 301 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions. Kind of a freaky first interception. Michael Williams tips a pass and jumps up and catches it. Pretty impressive. Might want to give number 13 some reps there at tight end. But like you said, he came back, had a very strong end of the scrimmage, and it made me think about 2 years ago, Stetson Bennett led a touchdown drive at the end of G-Day, and it was like, all right, okay, this looks pretty good. Well, then we saw what he was able to do. Now, I'm not predicting a perfect season and a national championship. I'm just saying you've seen it before here at G-Day. Kip, what about you? What stood out to you from what you got to see on Saturday and what the Bulldogs were able to accomplish during their 15th and final practice of the spring?
This wide receiver room is just stacked to the brim. I mean, I was sitting here writing game balls and just typing up praise for Anthony Evans, obviously being biased because I had him on my breakout draft and trying to write as much about how smart I looked as I could. But then I watched Dominic Lovett make an incredible catch. I watched Rob Thomas make an impressive catch. I watched a perfectly executed screen to Michael Jackson And then just seeing Colby Young climb the ladder, like, I mean, just like Marcus Rosemy Jackson was doing the last couple of years. I know he's gotten a lot of Javon Wims comparisons, but it just kind of reminded me of Marcus Rosemy and his fearlessness across the middle. There's so many options for Carson Beck to kind of pick apart a defense, and it kind of reminded me of how last season began early on in the game. Early on in the season, you're like, is Carson Beck going to be the starter by the end of the season? I mean, it was, you know, that's a little extreme, but, you know, he came out slow. And again, on G-Day, he had that same type of where he had to get in the rhythm. He needed reps. And I did not think that he would have 46 pass attempts on G-Day, but you could tell that they were wanting to get him just kind of lathered up and going out there. And once, you know, he got 10 or 15 throws in him, you started seeing him dial in a little bit. There's still some fine-tuning on some deep balls, but then, I mean, you see the over-the-shoulder throw that he made, I believe, to Lovett. He looked like, you know, he was just really comfortable running the offense after the first couple of drives, and I think, you know, that just kind of reminded me of who Carson Beck is. So, not surprised by that, but still, the different number of playmakers and diverse group that Georgia has on offense, not even talking about the offensive backfield and, you know, the tight ends. It's just that wide receiver room is as deep as I've ever seen it at Georgia.
Yeah, it was crazy. I want to say something like 18 different guys caught passes, which you understand some of those guys were walk-ons, not guys you expect to play big roles. But there was a lot of different guys that I thought were really impressive. And, you know, with Carson, I think a lot of people are going to come out of this and say, well, he didn't play that well, wasn't that good. I wasn't overly impressed with Gunner. I thought Gunner had his moments and sort of along the same lines as Carson. But on the at that same point and sort of on that same token, my thing is it was one practice of 15. I don't think you can take a ton out of that, and I think Kirby sort of made that point when he was asked about specific players after G-Day. I was like, look, this was one of 15 practices, and that's sort of how you got to take it. So, you know, I think Carson, I don't think there's any reason to be worried about Carson Beck. I think that you got to see on Saturday the various skill players and playmakers that they've put around him. I mean, I think he's positioned really, really well. And again, I thought he ended on a high note. And I think if you looked at his numbers and if you flipped it the way around, it's like, well, yeah, he threw two interceptions in the second half. Maybe you're like, not exactly the note you want to end spring on, but had a really impressive final drive. I don't think there's anything to worry about when it comes to Carson. I want to ask you guys, I thought a big point and sort of part of the narrative of this G-Day was seeing new guys stand out, whether it was a transfer, because we know they've gotten several different new guys in, or a freshman, and there were several freshmen who made their presence felt. I'm going to start with you, Kip. Was there one newcomer, whether it was a freshman or a transfer, that really caught your attention that, you know, seeing what they did on Saturday has you excited about what they could do by the time we get to the fall?
Yeah, I mean, really, if you think about it, Georgia is looking for some explosive plays in their front seven, and I really, toward the end of the game, just seeing what Joseph Jonah-Ajonye brought to the table, he just had a couple of plays where he just looked different than the other defensive linemen out there. And I think that explosiveness from him really stood out to me. I know that, you know, he's young, but, you know, making a play in the backfield on G-Day is something you can build off of. And I think as far as impact plays, that's what he's going to bring to the table. It's, you know, it's going to be up to Trey Scott and the entire coaching staff to kind of get him to do that consistently. But I think, you know, there is a path to him having an actual role for Georgia this season. If they're not getting impact plays from the other guys, he's going to move up that chart. He's going to get see an increased role. And that's kind of what I saw a glimpse of today. It's really just about consistency. That's what Kirby Smart's going to harp on from these guys. But, I mean, again, you see a guy like that, they're not supposed to really move the way that he moves at his size. His athleticism is off the charts. And so I think he's a guy that, again, you take what you saw today. Like you guys said, that's just one of 15 practices. I'm sure there's some days where he had goals, probably got beat on a lot of reps. But it's still those wild reps that remind you the sky is the limit for him. And I think, you know, he's going to be a guy at the end of the year that Kirby Smart's talking about. he's really established himself as a guy going into year two that I think, you know, we're going to put a lot of trust in.
What if I told you imaginary friends are real?
This is just so exciting.
This Friday, get ready for the movie event with the greatest cast you've ever imagined.
Showtime.
Ryan Reynolds, John Krasinski, Kaylee Fleming, Fiona Shaw, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Louis Gossett Jr., Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, George Clooney, Maya Rudolph, Bradley Cooper, Sebastian Maniscalco, John Stewart, Sam Rockwell, Awkwafina, Keegan-Michael Key, and Steve Carell.
I need to throw up or I need a snack. It's one of the two.
Gross.
If. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Written and directed by John Krasinski.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
What about you, Ben? Who was a newcomer that you thought really stood out on Saturday, who you thought made a good impression as they get ready for their first year as a Bulldog?
Well, he's someone we brought up a lot this spring. I mean, Colby Young, for him in that red zone situation to go up and make a contested catch for a touchdown. It's what we've heard about Colby Young a lot so far this spring. It's why we've mentioned him as much as we have since he transferred from Miami. But for him to go up and make that play, I thought that it was, you know, a testament to the skill set that he brings. That's exactly why they brought him in for situations like that. And I thought it was telling, you know, everybody was getting real excited. People were running over to him, trying to, you know, throw him up in the air, getting maybe a little overhyped for a practice touchdown. And Colby did not approach it that way. He kind of just tossed the ball to the side and jogged away because it, you know, sounds like these are the types of plays that he's accustomed to making on a regular basis. So I feel like I need to bring him up, but my eyes are also going to gravitate to the freshmen just because I covered them, you know, the previous year. And I thought that two defensive backs really stood out to me in terms of how they looked physically, but also just kind of their tenacity and approach to the game. I thought that KJ Bolden and Ellis Robinson, the two five-star defensive backs that Georgia brought in the 2024 cycle, they got some really good run out there, both working with the second team. You can just tell the physical traits are there with both of those guys, and I think that you can see there's some instinct there with both of them as well. I think we're going to see a lot of both of them on special teams as freshmen, and it really wouldn't surprise me at all if they're able to crack the defensive back rotation in some capacity, even if it's not starting or even if it's not feature roles in the Clemson game. They're two guys that I do think have a chance to get on the field early as freshmen.
Yeah, you know, with the corners, I did want to just mention that, you know, starting it was Daylon Everett and Julian Humphrey, but I think that we're going to continue to see competition. And I want to bring up, to the point that Ben was just making about KJ, some of those guys, that second team defense, just listen to all the newcomers among the leading tacklers. KJ Bolden and Jake Pope both led the team with four tackles, as well as Xavier McLeod. So that's three guys, all tied for the team lead who are new. Right behind them with three tackles, freshman Ellis Robinson, freshman Justin Williams, and then right behind him was Joseph Jonah Ajanye. So, I mean, that is a ton of guys who were not in this program when we're talking about this past fall. So, to me, that's really impressive. To me, Colby Young was the name that immediately came to mind for me. But I also want to shout out Trevor Etienne. I don't think he had a ton of carries, but he made some explosive plays. Four carries for 24 yards. He had another run that looked destined to be a big one, and it came back on a hold. But he had an 18-yard run. I think you sort of saw a glimpse of what he's capable of. And I'll get y'all's opinion. I came out of this, I didn't really have questions about the running back room, but I was impressed by what I saw. And you factor in, you know, the fact that Branson Robinson, he was dressed out. He kind of went through pregame stuff, but you knew he wasn't going to play as he continues to work back from that injury he suffered last August. So, you know, I think that they're sitting pretty with the running back room. I think that with what they've got, and then Chauncey Bowens was one of the early enrollees, and then they're adding Nate Frazier and Dwight Phillips Jr. I came away really liking what I saw Trevor Etienne, and I came away feeling pretty good about the running game.
Yeah, I would agree completely about the running game. I mean, Kirby had you know, brought up maybe sliding the running backs a little bit earlier in spring, that they hadn't gotten some explosive runs after there was positive feedback about the running backs. But I think, you know, you mentioned Trevor Etienne. I think all eyes were on him and sort of how he would look in the passing game and the running game. You know, I thought that he had a couple of really good moments. And then, you know, Andrew Paul, you mentioned in the scrimmage last week that he had found the end zone on a big touchdown run, and you know, he was able to do the same today. So it sounds like the running back room, there's going to be a lot of questions about it with new leadership, with Del McGee gone and Josh Crawford in there, and them going to the transfer portal at running back for the first time this year. It sort of signals some potential concern about the running back room, but I think they put a lot of that to rest today.
Yeah, you really like the depth of this group, and they each have kind of their own skill set that they bring to the table. It seems like they just really complement each other. I mean, Trevor Etienne, obviously, is just bringing an element to this offense that they haven't had since James Cook was lining up. And, you know, during the press conference, mentioning DeAndre Swift and James Cook, those are the types of backs that, you know, Georgia's always had a guy like that can break a long run. And I think Kirby he admitted it. I mean, Trevor Etienne is just a really explosive running back and a guy that you can use in a lot of ways. And on that play that got called back, you saw that burst. He got to that sideline so quickly into that second level. There's not another running back, you know, probably, well, on the roster right now until you have your freshman come in, but there's not another back like that. And so I just think with Roderick Robinson and Andrew Paul, they all just have the ability to spell each other throughout the game. And I think if Andrew Paul ends up ultimately being the number three back for the bulk of the season and he's coming in the second and third quarter, I think opposing defenses are probably going to be, you know, pretty frustrated with their hands and their knees trying to, you know, tackle these guys in the backfield. And obviously Georgia's going to probably try to utilize these guys a lot in the second half, as they should have the lead in most of the games they play. So I just think, honestly, you look at the backfield depth right now, obviously with the scholarship numbers, you should have a lot of depth at 7-8 guys on your roster running back. But I just think as far as talent wise, this is closer to what we're used to seeing under Georgia.
I wanted to rattle off just some quick names of other guys that I thought stood out. Lawson Lucky, I mentioned Xavier McLeod, Gabe Harris, who's a guy that when we were sort of previewing the G-Day game, he was a guy that I thought had a chance to really shine, and I thought he played well. Very excited to see what he sort of looks like going into the fall. Mykael Williams, I thought the fact that they moved him around and he seemed really, really effective. Jared Wilson didn't see any issues with his snaps, so obviously that was a good thing. I'll throw it to you, Ben. Anyone else just off the top of your head that we haven't mentioned that you were impressed with what you saw?
Well, again, sort of going back to some of the freshmen, I mean, Chris Cole almost made that play, almost had a pick six, would have been a walk-in, and he just looks the part. Like, when you – it's crazy to me thinking that that was a guy that at this time last year was – you know, outside the top 500 in the country in terms of the recruiting rankings. And he ends up as a five-star. And when you see him, he looks like a Georgia linebacker five-star. I think him and Justin Williams, it's interesting. You can sort of tell that they're the freshmen because you look at Jalen Walker and C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson. You can tell they've been in the Georgia strength and conditioning program for some time now. And, you know, obviously for those two guys, they're relatively fresh. So they look maybe a little bit slighter than some of the other linebackers do, but you can tell that the potential is really there with both of those guys. And so I don't want to get too far ahead of myself because we've really seen a very small sample size of the 2024 recruiting class, but they look like a class that Georgia did a really, really good job of evaluating early on.
Going back to that wide receiver room, I know he had the tough – he missed a ball at the end of the game, but Sakovi White, I mean, the touchdown play – it didn't surprise me at all. Like, we just talked about how this is a guy that's at the bottom of Georgia's commitment list as far as ranking, and we've never not seen him make plays in any setting. We've seen him in the day camps, high school, now at G-Day, already making a play, you know, as a true freshman. I just think, you know, it's tough to make comparisons, but again, you see Ladd McConkey already knocking on the door of the first round of the NFL draft, and then, you know, in comes Sakovi White, not the forgotten man, but just not as heralded as the other guys. And talking to the players after the game, they weren't surprised at all. They just said, yeah, Sakovi White makes freak plays every practice, and you kind of have to chuckle at it, because it's just, again, this is a guy that is 5'8 on a good day, and was not really highly regarded at all in the, you know, in the rankings. But you know, Georgia saw that early in him. They took his commitment, and they, you know, neither party ever looked back. And I think he's already going to, he's set up well to make them look good once again in their in-state evals, which that's the key for Georgia under Kirby Smart. Is you nail those in-state evals, you find those gems in your own state of 250 D1 prospects that other schools might not have as high on your board. That's how you win in the margins, and that's exactly what it looked like with Sakovi White out there today.
No, I think that's a great point, Kip. And, you know, we've talked so much about the transfer wide receivers, and we wanted to see Colby Young, and we wanted to see Michael Jackson. You know, we've talked about Ra Ra Thomas and Dom Lovett over the last 2 years. And I think sometimes the freshman wide receivers get lost in the shuffle a little bit. And for Sakovi White to make that play, nobody who's watched Sakovi White is surprised at all to see him make a play in front of a lot of fans like this. But also, Nitro Tuckle makes a play down the field as well. And I think for both of the 2024 class wide receivers to be able to make an impact on G-Day, it's going to be a great selling point for other wide receivers in the 2025 class. But I think it also just raises the confidence of some of the young guys in that room, because it is such a busy room. And I also need to bring up, and one of you all might have brought him up and I might have missed it, but Michael Williams is just unbelievable. I mean, for him to make that deflection interception off of Carson Beck, for him to just create as much havoc as he constantly does. I mean, we've mentioned a bunch this spring, sometimes you forget about guys, not that Michael Williams has been forgotten about, but sometimes we get so caught up in the new guys or what's fresh or who have we not talked about, that you don't want to lose sight of certain guys in the program that really define what the success of the program could be. And Michael Williams really feels like one of those guys.
Another guy I wanted to mention was CJ Allen. I thought he made a lot of plays. Troy Bowles as well. Seemed like those inside linebackers were able to make the most of this day. Fellas, before we change the topic, anything else about G-Day? Anything? Ben, I wanted you to mention what you pointed out when we were getting done. Kirby's decision not to go for two, not to go for the win there at the end of the scrimmage.
Yeah, like I said, everybody I think here would have loved to see a winner and a loser. I think most people come to sporting events hoping to see a winner and a loser. Maybe a spring game where you don't have to feel like the first team offense or the first team defense is, you know, one of those moments where you're okay with a tie. But I think Kirby Smart saying the reason that we didn't go for two in that situation is because we didn't want to show any of our two-point plays is just the most Kirby Smart quote of all time. I mean, the fact that he's already thinking about a two-point situation in the SEC championship game in December is just, you know, next-level thinking, not surprised at all. And also, there's a part of him that I think is probably, you know, glad to be able to send people home with a tie and say, look, you can't figure out whether it's our offense that had a good day, whether it's our defense that had a good day. There's always such, you know, talk back and forth after a scrimmage of this side of the ball won the day. And now I think he's able to sort of go and laugh at everybody and say everybody won the day, or maybe everybody lost the day, depending on what kind of mood that he's in.
Yeah, I think he'll get to let the players know the next time that they're practicing that nobody went to losers. Nobody won that game, but I thought that was funny. Kip, any parting thoughts on G-Day? Anything else we haven't hit on that sort of sticks with you as we talk about the scrimmage?
Yeah, I mean, not only did he find a way for, you know, a situation where fans don't have a way to panic and probably save some money on steaks, but also I just think after the, you know, in this press conference, he sounded like, you know, he hasn't gotten everything he wants out of these players, and he made it known. Every single time he was asked about a specific player, he basically said, we need more out of him. We need more out of him, whether it's leadership, whether it's, you know, hustle, or just, you know, whether it's just their day-to-day play. He made it very apparent that Georgia is not where it needs to be, and I think you could tell from Kirby Smart, for anyone questioning where he's at as far as his coaching career, his motivation, he plans on pushing this team a lot more over the next couple weeks and months in preparation for Clemson. And he's also just asked about, you know, having the whole offseason prepared. And I think that's where Kirby's at his best, is whenever you have that season opener with a premier opponent, just like we saw in the Oregon game a couple years ago. He's going to use everything, you know, from today and this entire spring to just push this team even further over the summer. So I think, you know, it was a perfect outcome for Kirby, because now he's going to go back and tell everyone, none of you guys won. Like, none of you guys have bragging rights. Everyone in this room had a chance to win this game, and none of you got it done. So what are we now going to do to push ourselves even more, to win the day moving forward? So, yeah, I think it really worked out perfectly for Kirby.
Yeah, I don't think he would have drawn it up any other way, that's for sure. Well, we did have some recruiting news pretty much as soon as we sat down to record this podcast. I also want to say thanks to everyone who's listening and bearing with us. I'm sure there's wind. We are literally sitting in the stands at Sanford Stadium. They've got the spigots on right now, getting the field nice and making sure it's watered to get ready by the time we get back here in September. But there was some recruiting news. Darren Akinnebog decides to commit to Georgia, a big edge rusher target out of the state of New Jersey. Big win for Georgia. Ben, tell us about Darren, what Georgia gets in him, and how Georgia was able to seal the deal with a very talented edge rusher.
Well, I'll start with a pronunciation lesson for everybody listening, because I know everyone's going to have trouble with this one. His name's Darren Akinnebog. He is 6'5", 251-pound edge rusher out of, like Jordan said, New Jersey. And I think that's notable because last cycle, with Fran Brown's involvement on the staff, Georgia was able to get Nyjer Daniels, was able to get Jordan Thomas. Those were the two top-ranked players in the state of Georgia, or in the state of New Jersey, in the 2024 class. Now Darren Akinnebog is ranked the number one player in the 2025 cycle out of New Jersey. Even though Fran Brown is no longer on staff, Georgia has certainly maintained that New Jersey pipeline. And I think that's a good one to have because there's a lot of really talented football players. And I think that, honestly, there's sort of a similarity between the way, from my experience, players from New Jersey are wired and the way that Georgia wants its football players to be wired. And I think that Darren Akinnebog is a perfect example of that. You know, early on in the cycle, when he came and visited for the junior day at the beginning of the year, it wasn't a name that a bunch of people were super familiar with. He was ranked lower than a lot of Georgia's other edge targets in this class. And, you know, when his name came up and I became aware that he was going to be visiting for the junior day, I was told that this is a guy that Georgia really, really likes. And he's someone that is definitely higher on the board in Athens than maybe he is at some of the recruiting services. And I think that all the recruiting services over the last couple of months, we've caught up to how some of these programs feel about him as a prospect. I mean, Georgia had him really, really high on his list. Ohio State had him really, really high on their board as well. And for him to make this visit, you know, he let the coaches know before the spring game that he wanted to commit, that he wanted to be locked in to the class as Georgia's seventh commitment in the 2025 cycle. And he announced it officially, you know, after the game, once he got to go back and hang out with some coaches and with his high school coaches in town with him for this weekend as well. They got a chance to spend some time with coaches immediately after G-Day, and they put it out there after that as well. And so, huge addition for Georgia in the class. I think that, you know, we saw two cycles ago, Georgia really loaded up at outside linebacker with Damon Wilson, Gabe Harris, Samuel Mpemba. Last cycle, they maybe took a step back from a numbers standpoint, but added a really talented in-state guy in Quintavious Johnson that I think has a really bright future in Athens. But I think this is another cycle that Georgia would like to load up at outside linebacker. And, you know, we've seen it before. I just mentioned the trio that they added in 2023, a guy like Gabe Harris kind of has that down lineman ability, but also stand up edge rusher, outside linebacker ability. It seems to me that Georgia wants to find one or two guys every cycle that can maybe dabble a little bit in both. And I think that Darren Akinnebog is someone that has that potential. Like I said, 6'5", 251. He's only 16 years old. He didn't play football his freshman year of high school. And so he is really, people talk about it all the time, prospects that are only scratching the surface of what they're capable of. Darren Akinnebog is the epitome of scratching the surface of what he's capable of. I think that, you know, when we look 2-3 years down the line, what his body is going to be and just technically how much more sound he is going to be as a football player, it's kind of scary for opposing offensive lines, I think, what he has the ability to do.
The Garden State continues to be very, very productive for Georgia. Kip, what do you think of this addition, a big addition at edge rusher, and just what getting Darren means for Georgia, being able to land such a talented prospect?
I mean, you give me a 6'5", 250 kid who right now is more of a reactionary pass rusher, still kind of learning to add to his skill set, but I just love the fact that he wrestles. I mean, that you win the leverage game, as a versatile pass rusher, a guy that, like Ben said, is going to be probably utilized in multiple situations for Georgia. The multi-sport thing, but just especially, the wrestling aspect of it. I think leverage is just so important when you're trying to shed blocks. And I think it's another big win for Georgia. And I think that was a key position to need for this class. They got to get some, elite edge rushers and guys who can get to the quarterback and make havoc plays. And I really think he checks a lot of the boxes physically of what you look for, and also just the mentality of a Georgia football player.
You mentioned, Kip, the wrestling background. I think that's a pretty fun story. So I mentioned that he didn't play football his freshman year of high school, and he'd actually reclassified, like he skipped a grade essentially from eighth grade to ninth grade, which probably gives you an idea of who he is academically. I mean, he's got a sister that's about to be a doctor. He's got cousins that are about to be doctors. His coach, when I talk with him, they talk about how important just excelling in life is to the Akinigbon family in general. But I find it interesting, he didn't play football his freshman year because he was playing basketball. And when I ask his high school coach, like, what's his game like, he compared him to Zach Edey at Purdue. And I find it a little bit hard to believe that he's playing like a 7'4" guy, but maybe at his level he was playing similarly. But when he went out to play football, there were a couple of other FBS type of defensive linemen that were out there. One guy that ended up going to Iowa State that was, sort of took on a leadership role with Darren early in his career. And he was not wrestling originally, but the football coaches at Hillside, Barris Grant, the head coach who was with Darren on his visit here today for G-Day, he really felt that wrestling would be important for improving his football skill set. And he thought that getting Darren out there to wrestle and work on hand placement and technique and just overall body control, because he was so raw originally, was important. He said that year that he spent really breaking into wrestling and getting more familiar with how to control his body completely changed the type of film that Darren was able to put out on the football field as well. So I'm glad that Kip brought up the wrestling side of things, because I do think the multi-sport background, football in many ways is a new sport for Darren. And I think that being able to learn how to control his body through some of the other sports that he plays is important for him.
No better place to learn how to do that than playing with the Georgia Bulldogs. Fellas, we got any more thoughts before we wrap up this podcast?
Well, I'd say moving forward, maybe not lean too heavily on our Masters picks. Hopefully none of you guys made too many heavy decisions based on our recommendations. But, it was a beautiful weekend. You could have asked for better weather. I know the wind kind of affected, just like in Augusta, affected a couple plays. But it was an outstanding G-Day. I think there's a lot for us to take from this. And just a lot of content moving forward at Dogs 247. So I just think overall, pretty great day for Georgia, and enjoy covering it with you guys.
Way to plug the website, Kip. Love it. We're gonna have all kinds of stuff along with Darren Akinigbon committing. We've got all the G-Day stuff, and there's gonna be plenty of stuff for the next few weeks for sure. We are gonna wrap that up right there. I appreciate everyone bearing with us as we sit out here in Sanford Stadium. But we'll have another podcast coming up sometime this week. Talk a little bit more about G-Day and some more recruiting news and intel for what's coming in the next weeks and months. So we will wrap it up right there for Ben Wolk and Kip Adams. I am Jordan Hill. Until next time, take care, everybody.